Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. The House and Senate both gave final approval, mostly along partisan lines, to their compromise version of the budget this week that gives more tax breaks to corporations and the wealthy and gives small raises to teachers, state workers, and state retirees. The budget also includes a raft of unusual provisions, including ones that cut off funding for legal assistance for the poor and create the controversial education savings accounts for some parents. Here to talk about the winners and losers in the final budget and what it means for North Carolina families is Alexandra Sirota with the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center. Alexandra, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, a lot to talk about in this final budget agreement. I want to get into some of the details, but overall, what was your reaction when you saw what emerged from the back rooms?
Well, I think it was a bit of a shock, frankly. The fact that the Senate and House leadership agreed to even more tax cuts than were in either of the proposals at a cost of almost $900 million, and that they put in place so many cuts was just shocking. At this point in the economic recovery, we should be taking advantage of the fact that our revenues are growing and making investments in the things that we've neglected for far too long.
It's fairly unusual, the legislative building, for the budgets to be dramatically or significantly different from ones that were passed. But you mentioned they were in the tax cuts. They were in a lot of big cuts to the governor and attorney general's office. That's unprecedented.
It is. It's pretty amazing because in some ways the public is allowed to view and weigh in on at least the two proposals. And so leaders have a sense of what the public is looking for. I think the final budget reflects a rejection of North Carolinians' priorities, a rejection of our values that we care about the education of our children, we care about thriving communities. This budget sets us on a pathway that will really undermine for years to come our ability to achieve those goals.
Some of the coverage of the budget, at least especially initially, and it's changing as people have a chance to read, which is what I think is almost 1,000 pages when you combine the reports. But some of the initial coverage heralded this as the Republicans do. We spent more money on education and we gave families a tax break and we continued on our positive economic path.
That's a nice narrative. It's not based in reality. The reality is that policymakers are pushing into the next budget cycle many of the tough choices that will have to be made. And even within this two-year budget, they're not sustaining investments that we have made in the past because of the tax cuts. And frankly, they're not contemplating what's going to happen when the federal government shifts costs to the state in pretty significant ways. We're unprepared for that. And I think that for everyday North Carolinians, the meager, and I mean meager, tax cut that they may receive, and they may receive one, is not going to offset the fact that they're losing so much in their families' day-to-day lives.
But it looks like folks at the top and corporations will continue to profit from the tax changes as they have in the past.
Right. And the final tax plan actually consolidates the gains. I think it's really important to not look just at year over year changes in these tax cuts. But since 2013, nearly 80% of the net tax cut has gone to the top 20% of taxpayers. This is baffling. One, because we could be making investments in things that actually strengthen the middle class. And two, because we know from decades of experience that tax cuts at the top aren't going to grow our economy, and they certainly aren't going to address the economic challenges in North Carolina that we know exist, in growing inequality, persistently high poverty rates, and the lack of a rural economic development plan.
What about education? That's an area that is always at the top of the list when people evaluate a budget, whether it should be or not. It is very important. They're claiming they continue to invest in our schools.
Well, they haven't. I think most significant has been the lack of both chambers' attention to the class size mandate. We know that they had to make an investment to ensure that next year we don't face another potential loss of teachers in the classroom across the state because of the way in which they've failed to replace funding cuts that have happened in K through 12 education. We also know that the teacher pay plan, while important to recognize that our teachers deserve a living wage, falls far short of what is needed for those teachers to really see their work day to day in front of the classroom valued.
It's interesting that all the discussion about that, they always herald what the average teacher pay raise would be, and it's still not that significant. But there are some teachers who will get no raise at all or barely any raise. It seems they can't find enough money with the tax cuts to give every teacher a significant raise.
That's right. I mean, this is all about choices in the end, and our leaders have chosen not to invest in the people and places in our state overall. They've decided to select certain communities that will get certain kinds of services. That's another aspect of this budget. And they've decided to deliver another tax cut that will primarily benefit the wealthy and profitable corporations.
You mentioned they do very little for rural communities, and there are those, a lot of people are calling them pork barrel projects, special projects for political allies or people whose vote they want. And the House budget leader said people who are criticizing the budget must not want to support these rural communities, but it's a very select few they're giving money to.
Well, right, and I think the disturbing thing about the rural development investments is that they haven't been vetted. We don't know if they will be held accountable to certain standards. We don't know, in the case of many of the Main Street revitalization programs, what their goals are for the community. And then I think, finally, what legislators have actually done is reached into an executive function, the Rural Development Division, and said where they need to put money. I think it's critical that we invest in our rural communities, that we invest in our regions that have been long neglected. But in my mind, we know that we need a vision for that. We need the dollars to go to build the systems that not only invest in the Main Street of Kings Mountain, but also look at the ways in which that community can connect into a broader region.
What did you make of the $10 million cut to the Attorney General's office for the Department of Justice, almost $1 million cut to the governor's office that came out of the back rooms?
It's a little hard to understand what the goal was there. Certainly, we know that legislative leaders have to look everywhere they can to cut services and programs in order to fund their tax cuts for the wealthy. But certainly this cut in particular feels like it doesn't have merit. It's really going to hamper the ability of the Department of Justice to deliver for the citizens of this state. You know, we have not heard any discussion about why that cut was made. And so I think that should be the question on everyone's mind.
I want to get back to something you said earlier, which still hasn't gotten enough attention, I don't think, which is the uncertainty around the federal budget. A lot of the folks who support this budget point to the 75% reduction in the waiting list for NC Pre-K, but a lot of that is federal block grant money that might not be around.
Well, right. I mean, we have no idea what the outcome of the federal budget debate is, but we've seen one proposal on the table, and it shares a lot in common with what Congress has put forward in years past. So I think we can assume that there will be a significant cost shift to North Carolina and that we need to prepare for that. And I think when we've identified a state priority like pre-K, that I do think that most people agree is a smart public investment, that we should put state dollars to that. And we should go further to make sure that every four-year-old has access to that program. But the use of TANF block grant dollars from the federal government, which is slated for at least a 40% cut in the federal budget right now, just means that in a few years we'll have to figure out how to pay for those.
The other talking point we hear often from the people who support this budget or the people who wrote it is that they put a lot more money in the state savings account. They have an unappropriated balance. And yet, as you have written and others have, we still have a lot of folks in North Carolina who haven't recovered from the hurricane.
This is the great irony, to be saving at a time when communities are really experiencing more than a rainy day, the devastation of their communities and their homes. Many still live in hotels. The unmet need, the federal government has told us, is not going to be fully funded by them. And so it's time for our state leaders to step up rather than save dollars now. We should be making those investments because our entire state will be stronger if Eastern North Carolina is rebuilt stronger.
Well, thanks for all you're doing to help us understand the budget. And we'd love to have you back as this goes along. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Up next, challenging the conventional wisdom about Trump voters. Stay with us.